Welcome to Empowered, Mind Body Inspiration. The mind is the map to wholeness, wellness, health. The heart is the key to genius and inspiration. Join me and my guests as we explore how to release and rewire into who you truly are, unique, whole, and empowered. Please like, share, and subscribe. Spiral up, spiral out. Hello, everyone. Today we have Cindy Marshall. Cindy's influence in health started in Wisconsin with her mom, who wrote a Whole Foods cookbook in the 70s. She and her four siblings grew up with organic farm food, homemade soups, sprouts, and wacky handmade musical instruments. While Cindy was in high school, she developed dissociative disorder, called depersonalization disorder, after smoking marijuana. This left Cindy feeling that she was out of her body. Not much was known on how to treat it. She has spent 30 years trying to heal herself from this disorder that came and went throughout her life. Cindy is now a certified health coach and helps others reclaim their health. After endless and desperate research, self-study, and trying every healing modality that she could find, she was able to crack the code and heal herself once and for all. This will be quite the story of self-discovery and empowerment. Let's see how it spirals out. Welcome, Cindy.
Thank you, Jane. I really appreciate it. I'm so happy that I'm here with you right now in this moment. It's all about the present moment, right?
Exactly. So perfect to say that. So, hon, let's get right into the juicy stuff. I know that you had something you had to overcome that was quite traumatic and difficult. What was the belief? Because this show is so much about mind body, I know now that you've, you know, analyzed it and come about realizing what the mental emotional cause was. What's your story? Was there a childhood belief system there or something you had to overcome?
Yeah, thank you. Great question. And it's something I actually was talking about last night in my Habits for Thrive program, because we were practicing understanding our root issues. And that's just the habit of understanding our root issues so that we can let go of the past or reframe the past and not think of these things as something that happened to us, but then reframe them to, okay, since they already happened, how can we make them happen for us, right? And so if I really look back, I would say that it took me, I say about 50 years because I'm 49, and it was kind of fairly recently that I started to feel comfortable in my own skin. And so in that phrase, I'll say that depersonalization disorder was my path to self-love. It began, I think, because of a search for love and acceptance. So what depersonalization disorder is, the chronic version, is that you feel, you know, out of your body. You feel like you're living in this dream state. You're disconnected from your body and your usual thoughts, and you're stuck on this hamster wheel of why is this happening to me? And if anyone listening has ever smoked marijuana or taken LSD, and you feel like you're in this dream or outside of your body, that's what it feels like. And you actually feel like you're going crazy when this happens to you without, because, you know, when you didn't substance. So, but why that happened to me and why our brains learn that neural pathway, and I'm going to just speak for myself, is I was so hypervigilant to being in other people's body and mind to be who they wanted me to be. And so that's when I say it was a search for love and acceptance. And why it was my path to self-love was I basically, while so broken, and so I got depersonalization in high school. And then for 3 years, I was in a disassociated state. I was able to recover. But then after the birth of my first daughter, who's 15 right now, I had a major relapse. And then I had another major relapse after my second daughter was about two. So my kids are a year apart. So it's when they were 2 and 3. And it was then that I had like a 9-year, actually, pretty much a 9-year depersonalization. I was really stuck in that. And it was during that time of searching for every single thing to heal myself that I really had to learn to love myself at my most broken, and at my darkest time. And when I started to say, I love and accept all of you exactly as you are right now, even with depersonalization, that was one of the things that helped me heal, was to use it as a catalyst to heal myself and rebuild my foundational self-love. And if I go back, I'm just going to say one last thing about it. If I go back even further to the root issue, it really had to do with attachment. And I did not have a secure attachment. I had an avoidant, dismissive attachment style, which I love to look at the circle of security model, so every time a baby looks into their mother's eyes and, explores their world by looking around and looks back into their mother's eyes. And every time that mother or parental figure is there for them, they start to build this bond and this trust, which creates this secure attachment. And then later they're crawling around and exploring and then swinging back to that secure base. And then later they're going to have sleepovers and swinging back to that secure base and then coming home from college and swinging back to that secure base. We had 5 kids in our family. It was a different culture in Wisconsin that I grew up in. My mom experienced a lot of trauma growing up. She lost 3 siblings really young. I didn't have a secure base there. It's not any fault of my parents. It's just the culture of, their journey. And I basically learned to become extremely self-sufficient and self and independent and didn't attach to people. But I still really, I think, always longed for that love and acceptance. And that's what I was always trying to be that for other people. And so it was really easy for me to kind of get in their head and get out of my own body and mind. So my journey was really basically essentially it was like coming home to myself.
Beautiful.
So that was a long answer, but
no, that's really beautiful. So yeah, like as a child, really, what do we want in life? We just want to be accepted and loved and to no fault of our parents. I mean, they go through their own stuff, right? But we're so programmed at those early years that we can be so influenced by every little thing they do. And if it's repeated, it becomes, we become programmed by that.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, and can I say one more thing about that?
Yeah.
One of the biggest parts of my journey has been kind of recent, because I was able to heal my heart and my mind by using like positive affirmations, like affirmative self-talk, all these things, like trying to figure out what made my depersonalization better or worse, managing thoughts and kind of like this brain reprogramming. But now, whenever I have a relapse, now that I know the real way to do it, it's so much easier. And that's to settle the body first before you settle the mind. And honestly, it took me so long to figure this out. And now that I understand that, like polyvagal theory and the vagus nerve, and how trauma is stored in the body, because the limbic system is only concerned with one thing, and that's, am I safe or am I not safe? And if you grew up in an environment where you did not feel safe, whether you thought you were tough or could handle it or not, it doesn't matter. Your cognitive thinking never got to make a choice, and your body will override your brain. Your limbic system embeds a code into your nervous system that says, this makes me not feel safe. And there's really no reasoning around it. You can't reason with that. So when I understood that I needed to settle the body first before trying to do all this brain retraining and all of these things to try to use affirmative thinking, which was really helpful to me. But ultimately, it comes down to, we have to look at the nervous system and how it processes trauma. And when I say trauma, most people think of natural disaster, war, or loss, or rape, or some kind of extreme act of violence. But really, trauma can be defined as any significant negative event or incident that shaped us. So they're finding that even medical procedures or minor car accidents, any of these things can cause trauma. But it's really when a child, feels, so for instance, if a parent is ignoring a child, they literally feel like their life's on the line. It's like a life or death situation because that's who they depend on, right, for life. So it's just been a really incredible journey to understand trauma and learning about, and I'd love to learn even more, but learning about somatic experiencing has been really key for me and understanding polyvagal theory in terms of depersonalization disorder. So I always thought that depersonalization disorder happened because of extreme trigger of the sympathetic nervous system, which it is, it's like over time. But after a while, there's two branches of this parasympathetic nervous system. There's the vagal and the dorsal, or the ventral and the dorsal, sorry. And the dorsal is actually where depersonalization kicks in. So it's like, it's basically a parasympathetic nervous system takeover. Like, this body is not safe. So now we have to come in and we have to manage it and override it. And because it's not safe, and we have to put it into this state for safety. So that was a huge piece too. And I think it's just important to address the body and not just the mind.
Right. Oh, that's brilliant. And so just tell us a little bit more of what it felt like to be out of your body. And then when you did this, when you focused on your body, what did you use to specifically to help yourself?
Okay. Big, great question. And I actually had a little relapse kind of recently. So it was like 2 weeks ago, and I haven't experienced depersonalization in over a year. Like, I'm talking like maybe a tiny sensation here or there, but no, not a full-blown attack. And I will say that it got triggered from the ketogenic diet. And I figured out why that happened. And it was because, so I don't usually do the ketogenic diet. I was trying to do this hormone balancing version of it called the Keto Green 16. It's actually really wonderful. But for me, I shouldn't have done it. And that's because what happens is if you eat a diet that's high in meat and dairy, that's going to put more estrogen into your system. And since depersonalization disorder is very sensitive to hormones, it basically gave me a hormone, like an estrogen dominance in my body, which triggered this. And I was able to quickly turn it around. But I'm just going to tell you that having a recent relapse has helped me. So I've actually used it I have a system that I created. It's a step-by-step system that has 10 steps in it for healing depersonalization disorder. And I was actually able to go through and use my steps to heal myself, which was pretty incredible. And every time I ever have a relapse, I always use my system on myself to make sure that it is actually going to work and also to refine it. So what I did though for this is, and this is one of the tricks, this is kind of going to get a little complicated, but what happens is you feel like you've been kind of like drugged. I feel, you know, you just feel like, when you feel out of your body, time, the concept of time gets really distorted. You feel like you're going to be stuck like this forever. You feel completely trapped. You feel so exhausted. It's hard to even really put a name on that exhaustion because you're trying so hard to appear normal, but inside you're freaking out. And the whole time you're trying to not have a panic attack. I call it the three P's. You have to avoid pity, paranoia, or not paranoia. Actually, you do have to avoid that too. Maybe there should be four P's. Pity, pessimism, and panic. Those are the three P's. And if you start saying stuff like, oh my God, why is this happening to me again? That's pity. If you start being like, oh my God, I'm stuck like this forever, that's pessimism. And if you're like, oh my God, I can't handle this anymore, I'm going to blow, I'm going to end up in a psycho. You actually think you're going to end up in a crazy ward. You feel crazy. So it's kind of interesting because reality is still intact. But things like even my kids calling me from the other room, like, mom, and like yelling to someone from another room, is really disorienting. Even walking from one room into another, it's like, whoa, it's like a total trip. Opening the fridge, you feel like you're opening like another portal into another world. lighting is incredibly difficult to be around, like lights coming at you at night, you know, driving lights, fluorescent lighting. It's really just so the dorsal parasympathetic nervous system response literally has these like physical things that are happening. It's slowing down things, and it's just really trippy, and you get kind of paranoid too, like I said, by accident early. So one of the things that I did to recover within, I turned it around in 2 days, and this is how I did it. I get out of my mind completely. So in the past, I would have done all these affirmations. I even made myself self-help tapes. This is back when I first got this. There's tapes only. So I made myself motivational speaking tapes. And one would say, like, when you feel fear. Another one would say, when you feel desperate. One would say, when you feel hopeless, when you feel exhausted. And I made these, I could put them in and I would be like, come on, Cindy. Like, and I had all these different things that I knew I needed to hear. And a lot of it was taken from Louise Hay's book, You Can Heal Your Life, which was so incredible for me because I had actually healed myself using only one affirmation. When I first got it with Phoenix, with my daughter Phoenix, I healed myself using the affirmation, the past has no power over me because I'm willing to change and grow. The point of power is the present moment. And I figured out why that worked. And that's because that had to do with an identity shift. I was saying that depersonalization was not my identity, and I was believing something new. And since our beliefs drive our thoughts and feelings, which drive our actions, and then the results we get, working on your beliefs is one of my steps, but it's not one of the ones I do in the beginning because it's really hard to believe something new when you're literally having a panic attack all day. But anyway, so back to what I actually did this time. I got out of my own way, and I just kind of went animal on it. And if you look at all of John Levine's studies on somatic experiencing, and if you go to healingtrauma.org, you'll see that they studied animals to see how they discharge trauma. And so I did the same thing. So I let my body, I just spoke only to my nervous system. I spoke only to my dorsal parasympathetic nervous system. And I said, how you doing? Okay. Like, we got this, we can do this. And I just kept reassuring my nervous system. Like, I wasn't letting myself think. And I have lots of thought stopping techniques. And actually I trained myself to be able to not let the hamster wheel of negative thinking and the hamster wheel of depersonalization get, I no longer strengthen those neural pathways because that's a whole different subject, but so I just spoke directly to my nervous system. I kept tuning into my body over and over. I kept noticing where there was tension. I kept breathing into it. So emotions are really this neural cluster of chemical reactions and all these other things. Like, it's kind of interesting if you look at what the definition of emotions is, and there's so many different theories on what emotions are. But really, if you look at the word emotions, right, it implies movement. It's something that's happening kinesthetically, it's happening in your body. And in some ways you can think of emotions really as just putting a name on a sensation that you're feeling. So instead of having words get in the way, I speak only to those sensations. And then I also have to do this other thing. So this is where I said it gets complicated. So there's a lot of trauma therapists have noticed that to bring someone out of a parasympathetic nervous system dorsal, you know, vagal shutdown, sometimes it's easier for them to bring them into a sympathetic nervous response, okay, into flight or fight, before then bringing them to their ventral homeostasis parasympathetic rest and digest state. And so that, and it's so weird because I'd already figured this out, how to do this before I learned that, but now I'm just able to articulate what's actually happening. But what I have to do is I have to energetically face the fear and move into it. And I kind of like swear, like, I'm like, come on, motherfucker, let's go. You want to go? Like, I have to move towards this depersonalization bully and I stand up to it and I energetically move towards it. And I basically trigger my sympathetic nervous system into fight or flight. Because it's really scary so if you're having a panic attack, to actually move towards the panic attack and move into it and let yourself, this is what animals do when they're processing trauma. They let themselves shake. They let themselves get hot. They let themselves tremble. this is how we discharge the trauma. But no, our minds get in the way. Our prefrontal cortex comes in, and our cognitive thinking comes in and says, wait, why are you shaking? Sit on your hands. Wait, why are you getting hot? Fan yourself. Oh my God, you look like a fool. You look like a freak. Don't let anyone see you. And so you basically don't let yourself discharge the trauma, discharge the charge that's inside of you. And then it gets trapped inside of you. So I know that was a really crazy long explanation. You might have questions about that. I don't know. Did that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. I loved it. So what we do as humans is often push this stuff down, cover it up, pretend it's not there. And it just ends up controlling our lives in the most unexpected ways.
Yes.
I remember when I was really young, I was going through something really traumatic and I meditated on it. And it came to me, the only way out is to go through it. And so I allowed myself just to feel the grief and go through it. But yeah, it's a beautiful.
That's the goal, to feel our feelings. This is why I quit drinking, because I wanted to see if I could feel all my feelings. So I quit drinking for a year, like last year. Now I'm doing no sugar for a year. My goal is to not cover up I'm not afraid of feeling anything anymore. Mm-hmm. And this is the thing. You think it's going to hurt really bad, but it doesn't hurt as bad as you think. And the power that you feel after you let yourself really feel things and not cover it up with processes. So when I say processes, I mean overworking, I mean gambling, I mean scrolling, all of these things, okay? Shopping, online shopping, all these things that we've been doing during coronavirus pandemic, or substances. So alcohol, nicotine, marijuana, sugar, processed food. And if you really look at what are you numbing? What are you covering up? Right. And the more we can, so I have all these different techniques. One of them is I take one of my feelings for a walk. And I did this yesterday. I actually did this yesterday because I was feeling something really intense. And it had to do with shame again. And just being raised Catholic, believing there's a lot of shame and guilt there that's probably going to have a lifelong supply to work through. But I will take a feeling for a walk and I won't try to change it on the walk. I take the feeling for a walk. And I say like, hi, you know, and I name it to tame it, right? So I name it and I'm like, what is this? What is this? First, I just feel it. I let myself just feel it. Like I tune into my central nervous system or my autonomic nervous system. And I say, what is this? Okay, where am I feeling this? Where in my body am I noticing this? What images do I have coming through? There's a technique I'm trying to think of. Okay, it's called RAIN by Dr. Jack Kornfield. So it's R is for recognize. So just pause and notice what you're feeling. Because the goal is to not add any more trauma, right? We don't want to add any more. So now we want to process things now as they come up while we simultaneously discharge and deactivate old memories. But in the meantime, we don't want to add any more. So R is recognize, so pause and notice what you're feeling. And then A is accept it. Just say it's okay. One of my, I practiced with a group here meditation. And we have this really great teacher. His name, actually, it's a couple, Michael and Fern Siborski. They have this incredible community, kind of like a live-in community. And I think it's New Hampshire, but it's called not Rising Sun, Morning Sun. And Michael and Fern taught me this amazing technique called the emotional garden technique that I'll tell you in a minute. But basically, Michael taught me that when you have a feeling and you need to accept it, you actually let it come to you like you would a small child, and you hold it to your heart and you say, I got you now. It's okay. I got you now. Just like you would, you know, when a little kid is crying and then you give it a little hug or you hold it for a second, then it's fine, normal. You just let them discharge that feeling. So I accept it. I acknowledge it. I allow it. And whatever emotion it is, especially for women, anger, I don't have a problem with anger because I grew up in a really fiery household, but I noticed a lot of women that I work with, they repress anger. So just acknowledging it, say like, wow, you're furious. No, you're not just mad. You're furious, you know? So then the I is investigate. You start to investigate. Like, and this is what my Buddhist teacher taught me. Like, what are you made of? Who are you? Like, where are you from? And Daniel Siegel calls calls this process sifting. So you notice your sensations, the S, the images, your feelings, and your thoughts. You sift. What are the sensations? Okay, I'm feeling this in my chest, I'm feeling this in my heart. Feel it, you know, what are the images? Wow, I had just had a flashback of this, you know, this time, or I just felt this wordless image of, I don't know, a wrapper being pulled off. Like sometimes it's really, they don't even make sense. What am I, if I had to put a feeling on it, if I had to name it, what would it be? And what thoughts are coming up? Okay, I feel this, you know, I feel like maybe I'm not good enough or whatever it is. And then the N, so that's RA, so R is recognize, A is accept, I is investigate. And I know that was kind of a little confusing because I did an acronym inside of an acronym with the SIFT thing. But then the N is non-identification. So it's not allowing the thoughts or feelings or experiences to define you. So it's like, okay, this, it's kind of like non-attachment too. It's like, this happened and now, and I'm going to acknowledge it, but it's not going to define me. But anyway, yeah, just, I know I kind of went off on a tangent there, but feeling our emotions is, it's one of my habits in my Habits for Thrive program. And it's really about looking at how we're numbing. So sometimes it's like, yes, you can still have the cake, but know that you're having it because you actually have an intense fear of not being good enough about finishing that project from work. You know, so naming it, and then you can still allow, but then eventually like getting to the point where you, they call it titrating in somatic experiencing, where you allow yourself to feel the pain for a little bit. And then you allow yourself to touch, you know, the pain. And so then you're not afraid of it anymore. It's like exposure therapy, you know, it's probably called that too.
Mm-hmm. So little bit by little bit.
Yeah.
So interesting. So yeah, because all of these things, when they're kept in the closet, they're the great big bad monster. But when you open the closet door and you really look at them, they're really not that, you know, as bad and as scary and as controlling as we once thought. It's shining the light on it.
Yeah. And it's, I feel like it's empowerment too. Like so many times it's like, no, you better let a professional help you with that. And that's true. Yes. You don't want to re-traumatize yourself. I totally agree. But there comes a time when we need to tune in to our intuition. And it's like, I don't know why I want to scream right now. I don't know why I want to go to the woods and crack, you know, sticks over my legs. And instead of thinking, oh, that's probably weird, I should probably let a professional help me, you know, figure out what's going on. We're so removed from trusting ourselves. And this is one of my biggest beefs about growing up in a Western, you know, Western medicine culture, is we are so afraid to look at the root. We just want to cover up the symptoms. This is like the culture we live in, you know? And I have a sister who went through stage 3B anal cancer, and she's almost 5 years out. And just going through that with her and watching so many people unable, you know, to process their trauma, and then they run out of time. You know, so it's like, when are we going to process our trauma? Are we going to wait until we're under the threat, as Louise Hay would say, under the threat of a knife? You know, she was raped at the age of 5 by a neighbor, and she had to be the star witness. This is before people knew about child psychology and just care for children. And she had so much shame and trauma over this, and she was even blamed, that she developed vaginal cancer, and she healed herself from vaginal cancer by learning to love herself. And I've seen this, and she says, don't wait till you're under the threat of a knife till you finally look at your root issues. If you really want to process trauma, and you've had a lot of trauma, or you don't think you need more support, then go to a body mind specialist. Go to someone who is going to help you to, because sometimes when we only talk about things, we can actually re-traumatize ourselves. We have to release those embedded trauma codes in the body. And that's why I love somatic experiencing, but there's a lot of other forms of therapy that help you settle the body, to settle the mind out there. I don't know a lot of them. I know EMDR works with that. I like the Healing Code, which is free, by Andrew Lloyd, because it's all based on energy. And so you're diffusing the cellular molecular memory, like you're down to the cellular molecular level. and you use energy to basically diffuse. So you diffuse the trigger. The trigger is no longer there. You still have the memory, but it no longer triggers you. And when I first, it's all based on quantum physics. And I think it's really pretty fascinating. There's so much we don't know. Even the people with the highest IQs in the world, I think it's like when they put their brains under microscope, or not microscope, but when they put all the EKG, or they study the brain waves, I think they're only lighting up something like 10% of the brain still, or 20%. We don't know what we don't know. And there's just, and that's the other part of it. So I kind of went off on a tangent about how Western medicine doesn't look for the root. And we have to stop treating the symptoms, and we need to go to the root issues, and we need to understand what those are and not be afraid of them and not feel like, oh, this, I don't know how to do this. We have all the answers inside of us. It's really about, you know, and someone else figured it out and they wrote a book about it. Well, you're someone and you can figure it out. And there's, yes, it's incredible to have professional help, and I totally believe in that. I'm not discounting that. But don't wait until you have the perfect therapist or the perfect scenario, or you're under the threat of a knife because you have to get, you know, a tumor removed, until you finally start looking at your issues. There's so many resources online, and there's just such an incredible wealth of knowledge and understanding. And if you look at the practices of Ayurveda, and if you look, and that's what I studied a lot, and you look at traditional Chinese medicine, which I've also studied, and you look at longevity studies, like look to the people who live the longest and ask them how they handle, you know, certain things. And we have so much to learn from each other. So I guess my point of this whole thing is like, if not now, when? And if not you, then who? Like, what are you waiting for to unpack this? And you can start, like I always say, what's the easiest thing to do, right? We have to aim for the B-, C-plus even. And that's to sit with your feelings. So when you notice that you've just been triggered, like, huh, something that person just said to me really ruffled my feathers, breathe with it for 1 minute and just sit with it. And then you can go about your day. Or at night, before you go to sleep, lay down, and as you're falling asleep, think like, what came up for me today emotionally? And then it's like, oh, wow, yeah, when I looked at that, that kind of made me feel jealous or whatever it was. And then you just sit with it, and you just sit with the jealousy, and you take care of it. And then there's this really cool technique that I mentioned earlier, the emotional garden technique, where you can actually bring in this other quality of yourself to help you hold that. So just say it is jealousy. And it's like, what could I bring in to help me hold this? Maybe humor, maybe laughing at myself, you know, and I'm going to bring in humor, and I'm going to have humor wrap around the jealousy and help humor hold this jealousy. So we have these tools within us, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And I just want everyone to feel empowered to start their journey somewhere. It doesn't have to be like, oh, I'm going to start going to therapy 2 hours a week with this specialist in California. It could be, I'm going to sit with my feelings for 1 minute before I eat this cup, you know?
Exactly. I couldn't agree more. And that's why I started the podcast, because I wanted people to just realize that they are empowered and that they can just start, like you're saying, right now. Don't wait for the experts. And you can't rely on an expert to tell you what is best for you. You know, right. Walk beside you. They can help you in that way, but they can't tell you what is best for you. So your message is really strong, really powerful, and I absolutely love it.
And thank you. I'll say that I spent probably $30,000 hiring people to help me, and none of them helped me. Yeah. I had one person help me. You can't even believe the different therapies I've tried over a 10-year, desperate 10-year period. And in fact, it actually made me feel worse, because I call them the hope cycle. You get your hopes up, and then they don't help you, and you actually go lower, like a roller coaster, where you're going up, and then you go lower than you were when you started, because then you feel even more hopeless. I'm not like, and everyone's going to say this is the method that works, you know, because of course that's what they're trained in, that's what they believe in. And I openly, like, I really thought every single one was going to help me. The one person that did help me was an osteopathic doctor who my sister begged and talked me into going to, because I'd given up on trying. I'd, I had tried everything. I had tried EMDR. I tried cognitive behavioral therapy. I tried acupuncture. I tried homeopathy. I tried going to like 6 different naturopathic doctors. I tried going to an endocrinologist. You won't even believe what I spent money on. Mm. But what it came down to, and I even tried regular, MDs. I tried everything. Okay. Well, I tried everything that I knew of in my town here in Missoula, Montana. But my sister was like, just go to this osteopathic doctor because, so when I went to her, she was like, she put her hands on me and she was, she's a functional medicine doctor. So I would say always look for a functional medicine doctor. So naturopathic doctor, they're really great. It's just not a lot of people know about depersonalization disorder and how to heal it. Mm-hmm. But for other things, I would always go to some kind of functional medicine doctor. So how she helped me was she said, Cindy, your hormones are really messed up. I want you to take this 24-hour comprehensive hormone urine analysis. And why I want it to be a 24-hour take, because you're collecting, it's like a bigger snapshot, whereas a blood draw is just like that moment in time. Whereas when you get a 24-hour hormone urine analysis, you're getting a 24-hour sort of a longer snapshot. And there's so many people that do not know how to read hormone. They just don't understand hormone. It's so complicated. I've very rarely met, and I've always wanted someone, and I even had that endocrinologist look at my hormones, which they consider like, oh, that's low normal. Well, that's normal to them. Well, someone who's a functional medicine doctor would say, they're not going to wait till it goes in the red zone till they do something. And some people are as sensitive as I am. So low normal for me was not normal. A high normal was high for me because that's just how my body was calibrated, just very sensitive and really sensitive to hormones. And you have to think about, oh, when did I get depersonalization? When I was a teenager and I had hormones raging through my body. And then again, when I was pregnant. And right after I got pregnant both times. So I knew it had to do with hormones, but I couldn't figure out. And I thought, well, I already got a hormone test. Okay. No, finally I found someone who was like, she gave me the craziest, like a short list of like 4 things to take. And it was something like vitamin A, magnesium, adrenal adaptogen, like an adrenal adaptogenic herb, and oxytocin was one of them. That was like something I had to get at a pharmacy. And then the last one was DHEA, I think. And in a week, I felt like 50% better. So again, I had to go through the body to settle the mind. I had to heal the body first in order for my mind to be healed.
Yeah. I think it's body, mind, body. Because what you said about diffusing the trigger is equally important.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Like to do both, you need to go at it both ways and to take mm-hmm. responsibility to do both ways. I fell in love with, I'm a homeopath as well, a naturopath that became, fell in love with homeopathy because it is mind-body.
Yes. But
Divya Chambra, I really resonated with because she was talking about diffusing this trigger in the unconscious mind and a way of finding a remedy that does that. And because I just love Bruce Lipton and what he was saying, I just gravitated toward that. It made total sense. So so this is the key. And it can be done.
Yeah, it is. I totally believe in, I mean, I am so 100% about preventative medicine. I mean, how I grew up was pretty wild. My mom wrote a Whole Foods cookbook in the 70s. This is like, no one was doing this. My mom and aunt co-wrote this. And we had a 1-acre garden, organic garden. My dad hunted for our meat. Like, we were poor. My dad was a barber. We had 5 kids. So we almost had to do it out of necessity. But I was raised to heal myself with herbs and always to look for the root issue because... And my mom just was really sensible, even though I grew up in Green Bay, Wisconsin, a very conservative place. We were like the freaks of our Catholic school, I can tell you that, showing up with our Volkswagen bus. And my mom would come in and teach everyone how to grow sprouts. And, I've always been really drawn to finding the root issue. If I could go back in time, I would have became a naturopathic doctor. That's what I wish I would have done, or someone who specialized in alternative nutrition of some kind. But I was good enough at science and math to study that, which is really crazy because I'm obsessed. Like, I've always been obsessed with health. I've always been obsessed with reading. I've always been just so fascinated by learning how to heal ourselves and all of it, like the self-love to the body, you know, the mind, the spirit, to connecting to something bigger than ourselves. It's something just I'm so passionate about. And I wish I would have had, I mean, I am where I'm supposed to be, fine. But I'm kind of jealous that you have a degree in naturopathy.
Oh, but you know, now that I have it, I realize that you don't need that. That every person just living who they are is a gift, and you're doing beautiful things with. You do not need a degree.
Thank you. I really appreciate that, and I do think there's many ways to arrive at the same, you know, the destination. There's many routes. And why I love being a health coach is I can share my own personal story, you know, and with all my course members, and we can together, it's like we're healing together. Like, I have this freedom. It's this incredible catalyst for growth, not only for me, but for everyone. And then just collective, because we become our environments, right? We become the five people we hang around. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like we've created our own little culture, and there's just a lot of freedom in that, as opposed to like one-on-one, you know, working one-on-one with a client in an office. Just the momentum that's created is just absolutely incredible. And I have a question for you, just being a someone who's studied homeopathy and naturopathy. This is kind of an Ayurveda thing, but do you believe that like the root of all diseases is impaired, like gut, like impaired Agni or indigestion? Like, so Agni is like digestive fire, right? In Ayurveda, but it's like, it's talking about emotional. So Ama is toxins, emotional Ama, as well as physical Ama, these physical or emotional toxins, like that are undigested. Do you believe that that's the root of all diseases?
I, from what I have studied with Divya, I believe that it starts through the mind body, that there's, you know, a stress that happens in our automatic mind that affects our whole nervous system, and that can affect our gut. So they're all interlinked. It almost happens together. But and then eventually that stress causes disease in the body. It has to, because the automatic mind is connected to the unconscious, and it controls everything that happens automatically in our body. Mm-hmm. That's where I come from. But
yeah, I love the mind, body, and spirit, you know, connection.
Yeah.
And that was such a big part for me, was to heal, you know, I guess to heal my spiritual trauma. And to reconnect and to basically be able to now let kind of something bigger than me flow through me too. Mm-hmm. Especially with growing up in a really, I'm going to say really shut down emotionally, family, and not just, it's not my family's fault. It's just a culture of the time of growing up in the 70s in a conservative, small, hardworking, blue collar town. It's kind of like there's a spiritual bypass that can happen, which like is put in God's hands, you know, it's all God, you know, just like give it up to God. And instead of actually feeling the feelings, and I see this in the yoga community too, which I've been a part of, you know, for many, many years, where it's like, yeah, I can go to yoga and I can feel good for a little bit, but then the root issue is still there. Like, I still didn't deal with it. I bypassed it. You know, and so it can happen in any, I'm not like picking on Catholicism. It can happen anywhere. And it was something that always really bothered me when I went to massage school when I was 18 and I was living in the mountains of Northern California in my tent for a year. And someone would just be like, can I pet your aura? And it's like, no, you can't. You know, I just, it's like, I didn't want, I've always been someone that wants to be like a truth seeker and a truth speaker. Like, why? You know, I don't want to put fluff on something. And I was just always really paranoid of that spiritual bypass. I didn't have the words for it then, but I do now, where there's something else going on and everyone wants to just sort of give it up to God or pray about it or meditate it, or just like, I'm going to just think of nothing because I don't want to think of what I'm actually feeling. I don't know. Does any of that resonate with you, or have you experienced that yourself?
Oh yeah. There's so many bypasses, so many reasons to not deal with your own stuff. And it's scary to go into it, right? And it takes work. So lots of us want to just bypass. And like you say.
Yeah, it's another process. It's another process to numb. Yeah. And so for me, it's like getting really clear about am I numbing? Is this a process? Is this a projection? Is this, you know, conflict? Like just like really understanding. Like you talked about earlier, if it's programming running in the background from a previous experience, or is it, is it something that really actually needs to be dealt with and looked at right now? And just naming it and understanding it, like that phrase, name entertainment, just kind of says it.
Yeah.
And understanding like, what am I really feeling? And that's why I feel like that just mindful connections, like tuning into ourselves, deeply listening to others, and then connecting to something bigger, whatever you want to call it, spirit, nature, universe, God, you know, your choice. And becoming, it's all about, let's bring it all the way back to the very beginning right now, because I know we're about to close, but it's all, to me, it's all about being present, right? Learning to love myself in the present moment, discovering, and really it's about, when I say learning to love myself in the present moment, it's really about discovering who I was all along. And really just uncovering my true nature. And this is why I feel like I'm here on this planet, is learning to love myself. And I think this is why we're all here, but then the advanced practice of getting, loving others unconditionally. And then the advanced practice of getting out of our way and connecting to something bigger than ourselves. But it's ultimately about getting in the present moment. This is the only moment that we can be guaranteed of. That the past is memories, the future is our imagination. This is the only moment that we have. And so just to be present with each other in every moment, which is an incredibly, it'll take me the rest of my life to learn that.
Right. And it's such a powerful practice. You know, just to add, and to tell everyone that if they have a physical symptom, it's like a mirror of what's going on in the mind. So they're both happening together, right? But to pay attention to what's going on in the physical, because if it's there, it's there for a reason. It's to show you something.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Thank you for sharing that. That's so true. Yeah, it's just a reflection. Our inner reality creates our outer form, right? The universe means no harm to us. It's just reflecting back to us what we give it.
Yeah. And to be truly present in the moment is how to discover all of that. Beautifully said. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, coming home to ourselves, like arriving in every moment, and just so thankful that I get to be here. And it was great to get to be with you today and explore all of this, and to share this with your audience. And also I'll share it with mine too, because I think these are important messages and just reminders. It's stuff we all already know. It's just waking up to it.
Exactly. Right. So Cindy, what last bit of information would you leave people with if they wanted to just start?
I always look to habit science. So if you want to start a habit, you know, so you just think about, everything has four parts, every habit: cue, craving, response, reward. So the cue, you want to keep it super obvious. So if you want to just start somewhere, like you want to start sitting with your feelings for 2 minutes a day, or you want to start a movement practice for 2 minutes a day. So any habit over 2 minutes is too long. So you want to keep it super simple, super easy. Just keep asking yourself, how easy can this be? Aim for a B minus, because anytime you try to be perfect, which is an illusion anyway, you're really just going to trigger yourself. And it's going to be putting you in that binge purge. So start really small, but cue, and then a craving, you want to make sure it's attractive. So if it's like you want to practice 2 minutes of sitting with your feelings, maybe put a cute cushion on the floor with like a candle or a smudge stick or something, or maybe not. Maybe just put a little note to yourself that says, feel your feelings. So something to create this cue and then something to kind of keep it attractive. And then craving, right? The craving, you just want it to be easy, and then you want the reward to be satisfying. So you want it to feel good so that it actually loops you back to want to do the cue again, because that's what reinforces the cue. So keep it simple. If you want support, and if you have depersonalization, I'm going to be starting up my depersonalization support group in April. And we're going to go through my signature system, my 10 steps. And then I have, if you want support and you don't have depersonalization, I have a year-long, really cool Habits for Thrive program where you learn 10 habits in 10 weeks. And then you repeat those same habits in every season, because you could be crushing it in the summer or winter, you know, next season comes. And so it's just about having the right methodology, the right support, because we all basically know what we need to do. Sometimes we just sort of need the time and space to carve out to do it. And then we need that accountability and support, because unfortunately our processes and our substances are always going to kind of drive us in the culture that we live in. So it's tricky, you know, but I would say if you don't want any of that, and all of that seems too overwhelming, because an overwhelmed mind will always say no. So you have to, if it's not a hell yes to you, then it's a no. So I would say you need to make it even smaller, really tiny. So like, how simple can I make this? How easy can it be? And start really small. You know, the kind of stuff that we talked about today was, I mean, we were all over the place, but really we're about settling the body and settling the mind and being accepting yourself. And I just taught a Sugar Busters masterclass. So and there's no shame in eating sugar at all. It's really just learning the habit science if you don't want it to control you anymore, you know. So it's just like, here's some tools to basically be in control of it. If you feel like you're out of control, like I do, I actually feel out of control with sugar. So that's one of the things I'm working on in my life, is eliminating sugar, because it's been my biggest addiction. And no shame. That's why I'm talking about everything. There's no shame for this. But we have to take the shame away. And I guess that was a lot of little steps, but I guess I just want to say, start small. If you want to start drinking more water, just fill up 2 jars of water that equal half your body weight in ounces and leave it on your desk. And then that's going to create the cue. And then keep doing that every day. It could be as simple, literally drinking water. And that could be the only thing you do today. That could change your whole life. Literally, I've seen it change people's lives. All of a sudden they're pooping again. All of a sudden their skin looks incredible and they look hydrated. All of a sudden their digestive system is better. All of a sudden they're not eating as much and they lose weight. It's just pretty amazing. It doesn't take much to make a huge difference. So tiny habits, big, big shifts. Thank you so much, Jane, for having me and for letting me speak about all of these nuggets that I'm so passionate about. And I hope that even if I excited or inspired one person, I'm just in a place of complete gratitude for that.
Great. Thank you so much, Cindy. And those are, you know, such beautiful steps toward empowerment. How do people find you?
I'm at beyondwellliving.com. There's 3 L's there, www.beyondwellliving.com. I'm also, anyone can email me anytime. And this, you could even do a free, like 45-minute session with me to see what it would be like to work with me. Or I'll just help you through one issue in your life. Any imbalance, doesn't matter. You can email me at Cindy, C-I-N-D-Y, Marshall, 2 L's, healthcoach@gmail.com. And I'll send you a link to set up a one-on-one with me.
Perfect. And I'm going to add all those links into the description so people can find you. Thank you so much, Cindy.
Thank you.
This was a beautiful conversation.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. And I'm excited to share this with my viewers too. So thank you so much.
You're so welcome. Thanks. And for everyone out there, if you're looking for more like this, go to empoweredhealth.com. And don't forget, don't give away your power to anyone else. Be the creator of your own life. Spiral up, spiral out.